And welcome back. This is your host, Tony Lontis. And today we have a new show series with an amazing individual. And I'm incredibly excited about these shows. But before I introduce you to my amazing co-host, just a reminder, Peo is listening live online all the way from the Philippines. Hello, Peo. And he's ready and waiting to take your comments and questions and send you links to anything that we talk about in this show. Just a reminder that you can find out all about our co-host and all of her links on tonylontis.com. And if you're listening now to the live show, just a reminder that you can catch up on any of the live shows by jumping onto Binge Networks TV USA, Hero Go TV USA, and of course the Tony TV channel app available on all Samsung, LG, and Roku smart TVs across the planet. Now, with all of that out of the way, I would like to tell you a little bit about the beautiful Mel Belmont. And she is a mindset mentor, intuitive healer, and speaker on perspective shifts and empathic elevation. From a very young age, Mel thought that she never fit in. She was severely bullied at school and wanted to escape up until the age of 15, when that's precisely what she did. In her 20s, she started to be inspired and to understand the concepts of the universe and spirituality. She started then her learning and self-discovery journey along with her healing. In her 30s, a dissatisfaction drove her to seek more before finally leaving her soul-dulling, high-achieving corporate role in 2014. By 2017, Mel was reprogramming her perspectives to align with her ultimate life path. Mel B is widely considered a change maker for the super conscious transformation, and I can't wait to talk about this in the show. She partners with empathpreneurs, and you'll be hearing a lot about empathpreneurs, to untangle their mind web so they feel unwavered confidence to accomplish the impact that they've currently only been dreaming about. Recognized as one of the top 10 healers in the world in 2019 and in the 1% of leadership coaches this year in Australia, Mel B has created a deep belief hacking system, a combination of strategic rapid results coaching and intuitive self-mastery with quantum healing, a truly unique way to get that unfettered confidence in you and what you do. Now, she's not about hyper claims or using her clients for notoriety. She quietly and discreetly uses her programs that combine quantum physics, mind web analysis, and spirituality for massive individual transformation. If you're wanting more client reach and to be seen as a change maker and to make a bigger impact in the world, then Mel B is the person you should have in your team. She starts with your deep belief hacking, analyzing that web of your mind, and you'll be able to integrate fully into your super consciousness. Now, all these words might sound a little strange, but we're going to unpack them as we go along with the show. Now, I'd like you to welcome my amazing co-host, Mel Belmont. Hello, Mel.
Hi, honey. That's a little, wow, what a beautiful introduction. I'm almost blushing. Thank you.
And as you should be. I love doing these shows, and I love the ability to co-host with someone and dive in deeply to areas that we don't normally hear about. And so you've had an incredible journey, and from horrible challenges, from sexual abuse to rape and cancer. And so you understand about getting our mindset straight. And before I throw to you, Mel, just for the listeners and audience to know, why I'm passionate about this is because I've had to do an immense amount of work on my own mindset, and so has Mel. So you're not talking to people who haven't done the hard yards themselves and who knows what works and how to untangle that crazy mind of yours. So let's start about talking about a little bit about your journey and the things that you've had to change in your life to reach this point where you are indeed one of the foremost healers, coaches, mentors across the world at the moment.
Thank you. Well, where do we start? I guess you mentioned what I call the trifecta. So shall we start heavy and try and get a bit lighter? It started I was always a bit of a lone wolf in school, both in primary school and in high school. I never quite fitted in. Now as a grown up reflecting back, it's like I didn't quite fit into the family unit or any group. Like the truth is I didn't fit in anywhere. Yeah. And I kind of now I'm okay with that because I've been able to kind of follow my own path intuitively, know what has been right for me along the way. And I guess it started pretty early, pretty traumatically. Abuse, sexual abuse as a young girl from a child from the age of 3 right through to 14. So in fact, I thought it was later. I thought it was about 6 or 8. And then I actually found some even earlier memories. So yeah, our mind really does lock and hide things away. So we start in that really unpleasant, heavy space. And I was pretty unhappy, to say the least. I was angry. I was confused. I felt alone. And I couldn't talk to mom. I couldn't tell my mom that my stepfather was my perpetrator. I believed the BS that he would manipulate. And it's common. We do get told lies. And we're kids. We don't know any different. We believe the lies that they are using to keep themselves from being caught. So yeah, pretty icky start to life. Naturally, I didn't necessarily have a very good childhood experience. I was bullied heavily. I remember one story of being surrounded, like the schoolyard bully wanted to fight me one day. You know, told the whole school, the whole school turns up. Yes. And I just had this knowing like, I'm going to get the crap beaten out of me if I even attempt to defend myself. So somehow out of nowhere, I just knew the right thing to do would be not to retaliate, not to fight back. So I remember just standing there like a defiant little 12-year-old going, well, you can hit me, but I'm not going to fight back. And all of the school, I don't know why kids do this, they're taunting, you know, fight, fight, fight. And I just knew the right thing was not to. And she, in the end, I don't know whether it's like all bullies, you stand up to them and then they back down, or she just wasn't interested, whatever. Yeah. I talked myself out of it and it didn't happen.
Yeah.
So that happened, you know, and then I did try and commit suicide, not long, but maybe within 12 months of that, because I was so unhappy. Poor little thing that I was. And then naturally the first relationship I got into was one that was dysfunctional, looking for that father role. Twice my age, I was 18, he was 36. Now I look back and go, that's just icky and weird. What do you want with an 18-year-old? Anywho, yeah, that ended beautifully with me really knowing myself and with him raping me. And I remember in that moment saying, hell to the no, is this ever happening to me again? Right. You know what? I'm taking ownership of my body and you can take what you want. And I just completely kind of just lay there lifeless. And in my head, I'm plotting how I'm leaving. Yeah. Literally, this was on the morning before work. I'm plotting where all my things are, where the bags are, and I'm packing my bag in my head whilst he's just taking advantage of me. So, yeah, it didn't start with a great childhood. My young years as a woman were naturally a little dysfunctional as I experimented with my body and gave my body away and sought validation. All those helpful, useful things that have happened for me to help me grow to become an advocate for men now, to become a demonstration that love comes from forgiving self. And how we actually can totally have our power, and no one can actually take the power from within. So, yeah.
That's correct.
So, can you try and lighten that up for us now?
I'm going to exactly do that. And the only reason that we go into that level at the beginning of the show is to demonstrate where Mel has come from and where she is now. So let's start getting into the fun stuff. I want to quickly talk about mindset and how powerful it can be in terms of the life you live, the healing that you get, and the fulfillment and impact you can drive just by changing the way you think. Can you tell the audience just a little bit about the importance of mindset, what it is for those listening audience that haven't heard anyone talk about mindset before? There may be someone listening who goes, what the hell are these girls on about? What is mindset? What is that? Over to you, Mel.
Yeah, it's a big topic, so I'll try and keep it succinct. I mean, we've got many shows, so I think we'll go deeper into specifics. So I'll overarching. So mindset is the way we perceive ourselves in the world, the way we think about not just like things like contribution and identity of what role do I play in society? Am I just a mom? Which is a lot of people say, I'm just something. Like, you are so much more than that. You're not your job. I was an executive assistant. My whole identity was caught up in that job I performed. We are so much more multifaceted human beings, energetic creatures. And the mindset is around the thinking and the way we show up in the world, or how we think we play a part and interact with our environment, our family, our workplace, society, even bigger into humanity.
Yeah.
How we think about ourselves is what most people kind of describe as mindset. Do we think positively or negatively is what most people kind of categorize it. And I think a little bit broader than that, because it kind of, there's quite a few schools of thoughts that thinking or feeling negatively or sad or unhappy is bad. And I disagree with that. We need the full gamut. We are human beings. We are not human doings, or we're not human thinkers. We're human beings. Mm-hmm. And in order to truly be and feel fulfilled, we have the full gamut. Polarity exists in the preferences scales, you know, night and day, so that we can experience it all. How can you truly be grateful for joy if you don't have any reference point other than joy? Go ahead.
Absolutely. I just wanted to say that sometimes people are not aware of the negativity that lives within their mind. And it's not until you have awareness brought to the way that we speak to ourselves, the way that we think about ourselves. And I know for myself that was one of the key moments in my own journey where I suddenly thought, oh my goodness, that's the way I was actually started to get conscious of the way in which I saw myself and I spoke to myself. And that leads us into consciousness and awareness. Because once you've been made aware and once you're conscious of those thoughts, then things start to open up and you go, oh, wow, I just spoke to myself like I was a completely useless piece of garbage. Why am I doing that? And why indeed, Mel? Why do we speak to ourselves like that?
That's a good question. What purpose does having negative thinking, if it's bad for us, why does it even exist? So we have protective mechanisms, and there's a little bit of this, which is less esoteric kind of concepts, is logic. And we're very logical, conscious minds. So we can think something in a certain way and say, well, here's a reason to do this. But subconsciously in the back, which is underneath sub, behind our logic, is the reason and the driver. So our subconscious protective mechanism has the, the phrase for it is ego. A protective mechanism has a label of ego. Ego's job is to
and
keep
it's
us
designed to, yes, keep us safe. And when we were living in dinosaur age, of course, there were many reasons to keep us safe.
That's
if
right.
If you come from child abuse, there's a reason to keep you safe.
Yeah.
It's there for a very powerful and a very good reason, but you can manage it, can't you, Mel?
Yeah, and so what happens is ego, it takes an energy, so it has a moment of being, and it filters it through the receptor of our brain, which is the oldest part, the most ingrained part of our brain, and it filters everything from there first. So emotions are actually what our brain associates meaning to and attaches a meaning to a feeling, an emotion. Motion, yes. Energy in motion. And so if we feel a moment of fear, so say there's a slamming door in our early years, and we get such a fright, and animals do this, we get a fright.
Yeah.
Animals don't have logic. They don't apply a meaning to that door being slammed. You're like, oh, that was frightening. Nothing to be aware of. Okay, and they instantly relax again. Whereas we attach a meaning and emotion and interpretation and perceptions. So slam door could mean danger because there's a storm blowing, which happened when I lost my finger. It can mean anger. And if it's happened before and time again, and every time there's a door slammed, it means dad's upset. So slamming things we carry in our psyche and our ego is interpreted as danger, danger, danger. A slamming door means something's going to happen negatively. So that's how it happens. Yeah. The problem is, as a child, there's no context. There's no logic yet or consequence from our experiences to understand what's truth, what's fiction, what's past, what's present. So a child experiences these emotions, the unexperienced mind interprets them, attaches meanings to the energy of the fears, of the emotions, and our brain brings them back and creates the emotion each time that scenario or something similar in the feeling occurs in our life going forward. So I still have a nervousness of slamming doors because I lost my finger.
Yes.
Now I'm okay. I don't need to address that. Slamming doors is not such a big deal. It's not impacting my life, but it does kind of create emotion. So that's how it happens. That's why it happens. Protected.
And so those protective mechanisms are actually stored in our subconscious, along with lots of values. And I wanted to link this into our conversation today because values matter, don't they, Mel? And how do they link to that subconscious?
Well, then we're moving into the space of personality. So we've got our set of memories and our set of automatic default responses. Then we've got ourselves, and I have a lot of mums around us with young children. They're like, I don't know where they get this little personality trait from. We're born with personalities. And so when you understand values as a way of understanding your personality and your drivers, so we're kind of like, they're not interlinked yet. We'll come to kind of help you put all these pieces together. But when you understand such as, what's an example? A client yesterday, their number one value was honesty. Now, this is because they came from a situation in their life with a lot of programming based on false lies from religion.
Yes.
All of these,
oh, yeah.
All of these perceptions. And look, we cannot even make it. It's not even about what it cause it. We tell our kids lies. Santa's around the corner. Santa is coming to visit. You be naughty. We use lies all the time. And so the values that we create as adults are usually based on a bunch of stuff that we learn. We're like, I cannot stand deceit.
You were kids.
Because I felt manipulated and I can't believe everything I was told because it's turned out to be so untrue and unserving so many parts of my life. Or, you know, narcissistic ex-relationships. There's a whole set of reasons why we form our values. But when you know what those values are, you can dial them up, and values change. Dial them up depending on what you want more of or less of, or if it's coming from a place of wound, we can heal that wound. So you don't need, like for me, honesty and trust isn't really on my top 10 because it's just an integration. It's just a given.
So
it's knowing what your values are and what makes you reactive, what can set off your triggers, then can link into your memories and your associated subconscious beliefs. Does that make sense?
Mel, that's, yes, absolutely. I was going to link that to back to that's one of the fundamental steps in how you help people, and is to understand what values drive them, what sits underneath everything they do. Because some people aren't, again, people aren't always aware of what values are driving the things that they do every day, the reactions that they have. And it's not until someone else, or usually you work with someone else and you become aware of these things. I would never have become aware of half the stuff that about myself had I not agreed to invest in coaches, mentors, the whole way through. As soon as I started my self-development and learning journey. And that's why you work in this area, isn't it, Mel? Because you work with empathpreneurs, and we're going to explore that word a little bit more, and help them discover these things about themselves that they may not necessarily be aware of or even conscious of. So let's drop back to empathpreneurs, because it's a tongue twister, and I've been sitting practicing this morning so I could get it out properly and not muck it up on the program. Mel, what's an empathpreneur? It's a wonderful word, by the way.
Thank you. So empathpreneurs are people who use their empathic talents and gifts either in their career or more specifically for the people I love working with for their own business. So whether you use your talents and gifts in the way I do, which is healing and coaching, so a very intuitive and compassionate driven set of service, other people work for somebody else, but they are still soul driven. And so an empathpreneur is anybody who has a driver beyond the materialistic labels and what's the word, success measures. So empathpreneurs are my people. The reason why is without empathy, we can't relate to one another, deep connection. And it's a big driver of many people in society is we're seeking such deep connection with people. And the empathpreneurs are the ones who provide and facilitate the change primarily to an order of deep relationships, partnerships, and collaborations.
Absolutely. Now, what makes empaths really special?
I have
goosebumps just asking you that question because we've talked about this, and I'll be quite open with the audience. I'm very much an empath, and so I know why empaths are special, but I think it's important that we have these conversations in these types of forums where we can talk openly about this is what an empath looks like, this is what makes them special, this is how they tick, and this is what they have to do to keep their cup full. Because empaths in particular, if they're unable to keep their own cup full, they can't give of those beautiful empathic gifts to the world. So what is it that makes an empath special, Mel?
There's different types of empaths. And there's different levels of empathic talents that, like, you might be on a scale, you know, you're a low level or really full blown empath like I am, which has its pros and cons. So what makes us special and why I love supporting them is their drive to make a difference in whatever it is they're doing. And that is driven because they sense, they know, they feel, they can see. Mm-hmm. They're tapping into the problems and challenges of society and the world.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. In like the highest level is we're making a difference, and we come with a set of talents and gifts that need to be honed and tuned up. Because mm-hmm. many of us, like myself, I only realized I was an empath, like a full blown empath, 4 years ago. Up until that point, I thought I lived with anxiety, and people would say, you're too sensitive.
Yes.
When I hear people dissing others and saying, oh, she's just too sensitive, she needs to tune it, like, calm the farm. I'm like, no. That's what makes her an amazing, phenomenal human being. That ability to tune and feel, yes, you may need some training around it, but the disconnect from people, from the planet, from animals, from our environment, there are different types. There's environmental, there's medical, there's animal communicators. We all have different abilities and different ways that we can help serve. And if you don't even realize that you are an empath, you are maybe blaming yourself for being too sensitive, when in fact you just haven't mastered your gifts. So that's kind of, I don't know if I've answered why they're so special, but it's fine.
I was just going to say, for an empath walking through the world, it's akin to walking into a room and immediately feeling, knowing, understanding certain things about people to which you may never have met before, but you are instantly drawn to them, or you are instantly connected to them, or you instantly know what's going on in their lives. And it's freaky and anxiety provoking until someone says, I think you're an empath. And then the whole world opens up and makes sense, doesn't it? And that's specifically why you work with empaths, because there's often not a lot of help out there and not a lot of understanding. I've been labeled with it, oh, she's way too sensitive, or she's, she's got too much anxiety.
Mm.
That's not necessarily true. It's just because you feel, see, hear, and know things that other people are completely oblivious to. Is that a good analogy, Mel, do you think? And is that why you work so predominantly with empaths, because you believe that they are the change makers of the world?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I love working with them too. It's like, well, I get you. I understand the challenges you have. I've been there. But I just want to catch the word you said. It's like freaky. And I kind of want to help the audience. Pseudoscience is a phrase, and woo-woo is a phrase that we have thrown at us all the time as healers.
Yes.
And I kind of want to set the record straight a little bit, and I definitely want to unpack this much more deeply in a future episode. Science has proven that this stuff is not woo, that this stuff can be measured. And I will give references to studies. I can give you books to read where you can learn about the stuff yourself without getting too caught up right now. They have measured people. So if we talk about the most common empath that people understand is human to human feeling energy, they have had people paired off, separated, connected to brain scanners and heart scanners, and they are feeling the same emotion. So when the one partner is subjected to something, the party in the closed off room is experiencing the brain activity is occurring that matches the person going through it. Now, this can deepen the more consciously and intuitively open you are. and the more connection you have to that individual. So really common explanations that people actually don't really question is mother-child relationships, where a mum knows there's been an accident. And the other one is twins. Intuitively, twins, whether they are identical or not, they have this knowing that something is happening or occurring, joyful or negative.
Yeah.
And there's no science to back it up. And yet science has proven that they do feel, they do experience. So I just want to pick up on that freaky. It's just science stuff.
Yes.
Do we have full comprehension and explanations for everything? Not yet, but they're doing more and more research.
We're working on it.
Yes. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
I can't remember your question.
And it's about... That's okay. It's about energy, isn't it?
It's all energy.
It's all energy, isn't it?
And that's why it's the quantum. It's the smallest measurement of energy. That's what quantum is.
Yes. We're going to explore more on quantum healing in future shows, which I can't wait to do. But I wanted to just change topics a little bit. We talked earlier about ego, and I just wondered if you can just quickly explore ego just a little bit, tease it out just a little bit more so people understand what ego is and how it shows up in your everyday life.
Okay. Thank you for pulling it back because, you know, I brush over so many things. So ego can serve in two ways. Now, the most common one that people go is, oh, they're full of ego. That's usually bravado, quite often false. It's a way of coming across confident when they're not feeling confident. We know those people. Arrogance is a really common phrase for it. It's where usually there's insecurities. Or a false sense of self, a little bit delusional. So that's one way ego can show up. The other way, and I actually want to defend ego, so please don't let me forget to defend ego if I forget. The other way is it doesn't feel like it's good enough. So lack, lack of anything, money, love, companionship, survival, anything that comes from a limited availability in your life, that comes from ego, not having a perspective of gratitude, of appreciation, what you do have. It only sees the unrose-tinted version of reality, whereas I don't want to talk about rose-tinted. It's like, what's another perspective? Because in any scenario, there's three truths. There's a two individual and there's the truth in the middle, because perspectives have been proven to not be reliable in courts. Eyewitnesses are no longer reliable. They still use them, but they don't rely on them solely because it's perspective. Yeah. We've all been caught out I thought you said this, and this turned out to be what was said by a third person.
Yes. Or eyewitnesses who say it was a red car and another eyewitness says it's a blue car. That's simply perspective. Neither one is lying, or it's just a perspective. The light from which they viewed said car might have been in the different, but it's perspective, isn't it? Which makes a huge amount of difference if you look and start looking at life as a series of perspectives. And if you flip your perspective, it changes the whole scenario, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can see things that you maybe didn't consider. And that's where the phrase putting yourself in the other's shoes. Because then you're kind of like, okay, if I literally face here and then look at it from here.
Yes.
Have you ever driven home and on a different route and you've seen like the same house from two angles going, I didn't realize they had that massive tree in the back garden. So it's a completely different perspective. And so on that perspective note, this is what I wanted to say about ego. Ego gets a bad rap. So ego, by a lot of healers, death of ego, killing off ego, reborn again and, you know, without ego. We need ego. Ego is a very healthy part of our super conscious, and we need ego. However, often it's a little bit hypervigilant, focusing on the wrong things and interpreting and trying to interfere with our conscious decisions that we're trying to make as an adult. I kind of liken it to your little 4 to 6 year old self, where you wouldn't let a 4 to 6 year old make decisions because they haven't got all the context yet. So I kind of help ego not be injured, afraid, fearful. So it's not, I liken it to the gremlins where we've got Mogwai, the little cute fluffy gremlin, and it's evil Spike.
Yes, yes.
Alter ego. Spike isn't evil. He's just like free, doesn't give a hoot about anything. It's just its purest sense. Children don't mean to be mean. They say things you're like, okay, with an adult context, we wouldn't say it that way. So what I try and help people do is bring ego back into alignment. Why is it defensive? Why does it see that way? What's its pain point that needs to be reframed, change the perspective, so ego is at peace and at ease and is then literally doing what it's supposed to do, which is keeping us alive, safe, physically from harm. So I set ego off kind of like to be the guardian of our spirit self and kind of like being.
Oh, I've got a beautiful vision of the gremlins sitting in the background of your life. I love gremlins as well. I digress. You mentioned in that last little discussion about super consciousness. I'm really curious about super consciousness because we talk about consciousness, we talk about our subconscious. Tell me about super consciousness. I'm fascinated.
What's the difference is the biggest, the most common question I get. It's like subconscious, is the same as subconscious? No, it's not.
So
consciousness, like to take it back simply, consciousness is me right now having this conversation. Like this is my conscious, I'm awake, I'm fully conscious. I'm not knocked out and unconscious.
And we're in the moment and concentrating on delivering the show. And
fully present.
Our conscious.
Yes. So our subconscious is what's driving that. So the thoughts are coming from my subconscious that then I'm consciously delivering. So it's all happening, you know, split seconds. I'm not thinking around what I'm saying. I'm intuitively just letting these things come through. That's like the driving analogy of you're changing gear. When you first start changing, put on the indicator and steering and look in the mirror and changing gears, like, how do people drive? This is so much to process. That's what's happening. Our brain is processing all these things all the time. The super conscious. Now I'm going to get a little bit more, I guess for some, they would call it spiritual. When we come down, this is the miracle of birth, or actually before then, the miracle of conception. So when we are conceived as an embryo, what happens? Well, apart from the sperm having its little moment with the egg, the soul
together.
The soul comes down, which another label for that can be higher self, but soul or higher self comes down from or around God, whatever it is you believe. But our personality, our spirit self is, it comes down with it. It brings our egoic self, which is our safety. Spirit self, then it aligns with our mind consciousness, our body consciousness. So we've got mind, body, spirit, higher self, and ego. So the five of them, if you like, are our team, super conscious team. Again, I can kind of get into that a little bit more, but that's what super conscious is. And so we're always looking to align not just our limiting beliefs. So we bring ego in to our team instead of it playing out here and playing its own lone wolf game over there and creating all the sabotage.
So Mel, what our ultimate aim is to have that team working in complete alignment for our higher good and for our life path and all of that. So all of those elements are considered our super consciousness. And our superconscious is what we want to have aligned to be living our best life.
Our soul-driven life. is when we get fulfillment. So our subconscious and our spirit and our mind, they're all kind of like coming. That's where we get these downloads from. And when we find moments of flow is when we have an element of that alignment. You know, people write books and maybe that's where genius comes from.
Amazing things.
Flows.
Yeah.
So that's super conscious.
And Mel, it's actually within each human being's capacity and capability to have them all in alignment. But somewhere along life's journey, they get misaligned or their perspective gets skewed just simply by life and life happening. And so part of your job is to bring them all back into alignment. Yeah?
Yes and no. Yes is a really high explanation, but to kind of what happens is around that age, depends on the child, but 7 to 9 brackets, and you know when it happens, and I'll give you an example in a minute, is when the logic and the consciousness starts to become more prevalent than the subconscious. Mm-hmm. So the sweet innocence is when we are actually open beings. Yeah. And then you know when the consciousnesses come in because they start to question Santa. They start to bring in the logic like, how does he get around all the houses? How does he fit down the chimney? So that's when you know that the logic and consciousness is starting to catch up and overlay and kind of filter out some of the subconscious messages it's receiving. So that's when the alignment starts to kind of split up.
Yeah. So have we always known this knowledge, or is there, because it seems to be more talked about, more prevalent, more understood just in my, you know, the last decade of my life, have there been teachers, gurus, practitioners, people that have known this information all of their lives? Is it we're going into a new level of consciousness? I mean, I've heard people talking about humanity going into a new level of consciousness. Is this all linked together like a grand plan?
Wow, that's a big question.
I know.
I will try and answer succinctly as well. So the first part, this isn't you. Ancient wisdom, there's been shamans and cultures doing this, and there's been writings about this sort of thing for eons, not just decades, like centuries, hundreds of years, right? And we're just, that's a piece I can help you with, this super conscious. So when soul is being created into the human form, it's inheriting the DNA and lineage. We know this is true. And some of the subconscious beliefs and programming and energy is inherited in our DNA. Now, some studies have gone back. We can find evidence of 14 generations. And I think as science improves, we'll find that it goes back even longer than that. So we can access knowledge 14 generations back within our lineage. In fact, many of the Inuit cultures and original landholders know this. They have intuitive knowings. It's just normal for them. Our industrial age has, and the need for science to prove things. Seeing is not believing, people. It's not. You don't need to see something to know it to be true. But the science is kind of overlaid, and things like Darwin theory and all this other stuff is kind of like, just in the last, I don't know, 100, 150 years have made and called it pseudoscience because they're not making money from it, or they have been able to prove it. But technology is advancing, so we can improve. Now, there's a second part I wanted to say. I can't remember now. It's gone. You asked such a big question. Oh, are we awakening? That was the question.
Are we awakening? Yes.
Look, I think something happened in the 70s and 80s that has allowed people to become more mainstream and talk about it. The crazy thing is, it's just the Western world has got a problem with it. The Eastern world has been talking about this stuff, and feng shui is just normal in Asian culture.
Correct.
Sanskrit for hundreds of years. So it's like the Western world is just catching up, although I don't even know if it's catching up or just opening up to it. There's some who are just more prepared to say, originally, I'm woo-woo, and judge me if you want. I don't care if you believe me or not. It's irrelevant. I'm still going to do it. And I think there's more of us who are brave enough to kind of do it and speak and pull together, which is then giving that, I guess, push for the science and the studies to be done. There's an amazing book at the moment. It's just been published this year, I believe, Why Woo Woo Works. His name escapes me, but if you just Google that, you'll find it. Why? And it's all the studies. There's like hundreds of studies around this stuff.
Yeah. So if we're heading towards a higher level of consciousness, if the Western world is catching up with our Eastern neighbours, then we can look forward to a greater level of abundance and all the good things that can happen in a human experience, can't we?
The reason why I love empaths is we have an ability to feel and tune in and sense. And I think the more people do that, the more kindness and compassion in the world. And again, that's been proven to be good for us. Kindness and self-awareness and compassion for self and others helps to heal us. And again, all the studies and science are there to back this up. These aren't my statements or claims.
No.
So the more people tune into the fact that I hadn't realized I'd been filtering so much out, and I had been making my emotions right or wrong instead of being and understanding why I'm being this way, I think it's got to be good for humanity. We might eventually stop things like global warming. It just makes me so...
And wars and domestic violence and child abuse and all of those things that are so destructive to the soul of humanity. Imagine children across the planet who never had to even think about sexual abuse. That in turn, just that little element would create a humanity that was so beautiful and so fulfilling and so loving that we wouldn't, it would just be an amazingly wonderful world to live in if just that small element was no longer part of anyone's life or consciousness. Because we talked before, Mel, where we talked about the DNA and the lineage of DNA. And I just wanted to bring up for people who might question what we're saying, I'll give you a little example. So I've traced my lineage back through Ireland, Scotland, and then 10 levels of Danish, and then the 11th or 12th generation is Swedish. Mm-hmm. And I'm an Australian, I've grown up in Australian, generations of Australian in my line, but I adore snow. And I wondered where that came from. And it occurred to me when I found the Danish lineage, oh my God, that's where it comes from. I like the cold. I love the cold. That's where it comes from. So a simple thing like that is your DNA lineage, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's all sorts of things like that that we're just like, where did you get that from?
Where come from?
We inherit it from somewhere. And just to backtrack about, you know, the change of the consciousness as a society, again, the studies are there that I think it's 80 to 90% of children who are deprived of compassion in their childhood grow on to be aggressive or worse as an adult. So we're continuing the cycles because that's just what we know. That's the frequency that we have been born in this generation to heal from our lineage and our ancestors and all their hardship. we're the ones doing the healing this lifetime.
Yes.
And
well, we should be.
Well, no, we are. There are thousands of us doing this, so we are. And that is raising the frequency because we're slowly eroding. That's why the Me Too and all these wake-ups are happening. Wake-ups, it's too woo. But these things are coming to surface.
I know what you mean.
That were hidden, that were underground. And now it's like, okay, social media and the world is opening up in that sense. But it was never addressed before. And I think it's because this empathic compassion connection is spreading. Yeah. And we're recognizing we do not need to dominate others in order to be happy, because I was dominated as a child. And
I don't need to do that as an adult because... Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mel, we are getting down to close to time. I can't believe that it's gone so quickly. And I really want you to tell people how they can connect and work with you, because your work now is focused on helping people shift their mindset. So tell the audience how they can connect with you, how they work for you, and how you see that playing out.
Look, the best thing, or one of the easiest things to do, is do one of my quizzes. So are you an empath? And if you're an empath, what level and what kind are you? Or just start doing some research. There's so much stuff out there on the internet world now. But if you go to my website, melb.com, under resources.
Really simple.
Yeah, Melb, two L's. Go to the resources tab, and in there, there's Am I an Empath quiz.
Yay.
And just have a go at that.
Lovely, simple little quiz. Yeah.
And if you want to find out more, of course, on the website, you can explore and find out more.
Connect with Mel, definitely, on the website. Mel, the shows that we're going to do, there's another three before Christmas, and then we're going to come back in the new year and do another set of four. Mm-hmm. Our next show, we are going to talk about a bit more in depth about the superconscious and superconsciousness, and we're going to talk about, you, I love this word, mind web analysis. And I don't want to spoil it for the audience so they can come back and listen next week, but can you give us a snippet? Mind web. I love that word. Mind web. Sounds like exactly how my mind is on a Monday morning. Mind web.
Yeah. So we create, how do we lock in these beliefs and this set of negative stuff. So this image came to me one day that it's like a cobweb that's sticky. But additional to that, a cobweb actually is anchored in place, and it's holding an identity, a belief, a perspective in place. And I'll explain how we untangle a mind web in the next show. But that's the kind of concept. And it made it easy for people to understand. It's like, and the thing is, we have hundreds of them, thousands of them. And so we just got to kind of unpick them. And so people talk about the layers of the onion. Well, imagine you've got a big ball of cobwebs, and you just got to untangle one by one and dismantle all of this BS that we have in our mind, belief systems that we have in our mind, one web at a time usually. But sometimes we can do several. So, yeah. Mind web analysis.
The reason that we want to do that is because it just frees your life. It empowers you to live the life that you're meant to. It helps you have an impact in your little family, your circle, your community, your state, your country, the globe, whatever that impact is that you desire. This is the reason why you'd work with Mel. Now, we are just about out of time. Mel B, thank you so much for being my co-host and letting us explore these amazing topics. I can't wait for the show next week. So, listeners, thank Mel B. We will be back next week, same time, same channel, and we'll be exploring mind web analysis, and further exploring the super consciousness. Mel B, thank you so much. And I look forward to us chatting again next week. That, my wonderful audience, is your lot for this week. Don't forget, jump on to melb.com and find out if you're an empath. You'll be glad you did. Mel B, thank you so much. I look forward to next week. That's your lot. We'll see you all now. Bye.
Bye.